Well, how has your week been this last week? As you look back, what kind of week did you have? What state did you come to church this morning? Did you come glad, mad, sad, bad? What kind of feelings do you have this morning? How are you feeling about the last week? How are you feeling about life? Do you ever share those feelings with God? Do you ever share your real thoughts with God? Do you ever share how you're feeling and thinking about God with Him? Especially when you're ticked off with Him? Do you share those feelings with Him? As Christ followers, I think we need to regularly be reading the Psalms in the Old Testament. The Psalms are an amazing book, an incredible book, where we can really learn how to pray as we read the Psalms. In fact, the Psalms can give us words to use in prayer. The Psalms show us how to share our feelings and thoughts authentically and honestly with God. And in the book of Psalms, there's really three types of Psalms. There's Psalms of praise, there's Psalms of lament, and there's Psalms of thanksgiving. Walter Brueggemann, the theologian, renamed those three types of Psalms, Psalms of orientation, disorientation, and reorientation. He says, Psalms of orientation speak of the seasons of life that are marked by well-being. They're Psalms that articulate the joy, the delight, the goodness of life. The Psalms of orientation are the Psalms of praise. Psalms of disorientation speak of the seasons of life that are marked by hurt and alienation and suffering. These Psalms, as you read them, you'll see their cries of despair and anger and protest and suffering and doubt. The Psalms of disorientation are the Psalms of lament. And the Psalms of reorientation speak of those seasons of life that are marked by a new understanding of God, a new sense of His presence, a new perspective. The Psalms of reorientation are the Psalms of thanksgiving. And for the next 3 weeks, what I'd like us to do is focus in on the Psalms of disorientation, the Psalms of lament. To lament means to cry, to sorrow, to grieve. It means to pour out your troubles in an outward verbal way. It means to give voice to your suffering. And we don't do a lot of lamenting in our culture. Have you noticed that? We don't do a lot of lamenting in our culture. And the reason we don't do a lot of lamenting is because we live in a culture that tries to push down suffering and grieving. Have you noticed more and more as you talk to people that when a loved one dies, the loved one says before they die, I don't want you to have a service because I don't want you to all come together and to grieve and to mourn. We live in a culture where we don't want to experience grief and mourning. We live in a culture that really is trying to push away suffering. It seeks to avoid suffering. That's part of what the whole euthanasia debate is about. It's saying we want to have the right to choose to die before we what? Before we suffer. We live in a world that doesn't lament well. It wants to avoid lamenting. And so we don't give voice to our pain and our suffering. And what we end up doing as human beings in this culture is we stuff our stuff down. And Christ followers, we're especially good at this. Because we feel like we have to have it all together. We have to be happy. We have to be upbeat. We have to be perfect. That when we come to church, we've got to look like the perfect person. We've got to look like we've got the perfect family. The marriage that's all together. We can't show any weakness when we come to church. We've got to have it all together. And so what we do as Christ followers is we take our pain, we take our doubts, we take our struggles, and we stuff them deep, deep down inside. And then we wonder in our culture why so many Christ followers are struggling with despair and anxiety and depression. Many Christ followers would be much healthier if they stopped faking it, if they stopped posing, and if they stopped bottling up their pain and lament, and instead learn to express them. Listen, life is going to be painful at times. The truth is, people get sick, people die, and that hurts. A number of you know Allison Carden. A number of you know that Sylvia and I were very close to Allison. We were very close to her. And just before she passed away, in her hospital room, Syl played that song Oceans for her. And to this day, when we sing Oceans, both Sylvia and I, we feel that pain, that hurt of Allison's passing. But that's normal. Because we're supposed to, as human beings, hurt when life hurts. We're supposed to grieve. We're supposed to mourn. We need to lament. We need to grieve. We need to sorrow. We need to cry. We need to mourn. We need to pour out our troubles and our emotional angst in outward ways. We need to give voice to our suffering. Did you know of the 150 Psalms, 57 of them are laments? There are 57 lament psalms where the psalmists pour out their troubles and their sorrows to God. Why so many? Because God knows we need to lament. The lament psalms, they teach us to cast all our cares on God, even when we think God is the problem. Our lament psalms show us that it's all right to pour out our hearts to God. The lament psalms show us and give us permission to express the full range of human emotions and thoughts before God. That they allow us to talk to God the way life really is. The lament psalms help you bring the real you into the presence of a real God. And so this morning, I would like us to look at a classic lament psalm and see what we can learn from it. Psalm 13, it says this: "For the director of music, a psalm of David. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise. He has been good to me." Now this psalm breaks down into three parts. Psalm verse 1 and 2 express David's feeling of abandonment. Verses 3 and 4 are a prayer in which David seeks to ask God to turn his face back to him and answer his questions. And then in verse 5 and 6, they really express David's renewed trust in God. And the reason I tell you that is because those three parts give us the basic outline of all the Psalms of Lament. All the Psalms of Lament, they start with protest, and they move to prayer, and then they move to praise. So let's move through the psalm together. Verse 1 and 2, here's David's protest to God. "How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me?" Now, these are not really questions. They are cries from David's heart to God. God, where on earth are you? David was convinced that God had forgotten and abandoned him. Have you ever felt that way? You come to church and we sing, "You're a good, good father." And you're standing there and you're thinking, well, if he's such a good father, where on earth is he? My spouse just walked out on me. Where is this good father? My friend just got diagnosed with terminal cancer. Where is this good father? I just lost my job. Where's the good father? My boyfriend just broke up with me. Where's the good father? Have you ever said that? God, where are you? You feel like God's forgotten and abandoned you. Years ago, after we'd been married a little while, Sylvia and I decided it was time to have children, and we tried and we couldn't have kids. We tried and couldn't have kids. Went to doctors, tried, couldn't have kids. Finally, we went to one doctor who seemed to find a problem that no one else could find, and we started to have a kid. Sylvia got pregnant. And I was overjoyed. I was thrilled. Yes, we're going to have a child, and I'm excited. And then she had a miscarriage. And I was brokenhearted. And I remember walking out of Lions Gate Hospital feeling totally betrayed by God. And I remember looking up at the sky and saying, God, where are you? Our moment of need when things seem to be going well and you just turn your back on us. God, where are you? God and I have a conversation that day. Have you been there? God, where are you? And I'm convinced that feelings of God's abandonment are far more common than we realize. We're just not open with each other about those feelings because we feel, like I did that night, that we're the only ones. But listen to David. David, the great king of Israel. David, a man after God's own heart. He says, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? David not only felt like God had abandoned him, he felt like God had removed his hand of blessing from him. Hide your face, that phrase is a metaphor. Back then, the Israelites believed that when the face of the Lord was toward you, it was a sign of God's acceptance and blessing. And when the Lord's face was turned away from you, it was a sign that his blessing was no longer upon you. And that's what David was sensing. David was sensing that God had turned his face from him. David was sensing that God's favor and blessing were no longer upon him. Have you felt that way? That at one time you felt like God's blessing and favor was upon your life, and now you look at your marriage or your family or your business or your finances in your life, and you just feel like God's favor has been removed from your life. If you can relate to that, you can relate to David. I have a friend, he doesn't go to our church, but I meet with him for coffee every now and then, and years ago, he had this amazing encounter with God, and for a while, he just felt like God's hand was all over his life. And then he says, for some reason, I can't explain it, suddenly God's presence was removed from my life, and I've never felt like I've got it back. And we've explored all things, and he can't explain that. But in his life, there's this deep despair that God's hand of favor or blessing has been removed from him. That's how David felt here. And then David says, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day of sorrow in my heart? David is in a dark place. It was his dark night of the soul. Have you ever noticed, maybe in yourself, maybe in others, that when a person no longer senses that God's with them, that God's blessing them, that those feelings can send a person into an emotional tailspin? In fact, the seeming absence of God can add despair and pain to an already painful situation. That's what's happening here to David. And then David says, how long will my enemy triumph over me? We don't know who the enemy was. Could have been anyone or anything, but David senses that the enemy is winning in his life. Have you experienced that? Times when the enemy of sin or other people or abuse or addiction or something else seem to be winning in your life, And that often causes us to cry out, "Where are you, God? How long, O Lord?" You know, in 26 years of ministry, there have been times when people have attacked me. And sometimes, I think at least, unfairly. And it can almost seem at times I'm overwhelming. And you feel like David, and you feel like something's happening, and you're losing. And you go, "How long, O Lord? How long do I have to put up with this?" I've experienced that. Maybe you've experienced that. That's what David was experiencing. He was stressed. He was despairing. He was sorrowful. His soul was in utter turmoil. And here's the thing I like. He was honest about it. David didn't stuff it down inside. David didn't pretend everything was okay. David says, "My life sucks. And let me tell you about it, God. And you're part of the problem. You're not even seemingly around. I can't sense you." Don't you love the fact he was honest? That a man after God's own heart wrote that down so we can read those words today and we can learn. David's example should be both an encouragement and something that's very freeing to us. Because when we see a guy like David, a man after God's own heart, venting his frustration with God, we should say, "Wow, that's an encouragement to me. That means I can do it." That should be freeing and saying, "Look at, I don't got to stuff it all down inside. I can voice to God my protests. I can say, God, where on earth are you? I can say, God, how long?" I can be honest with God. And then David moves from protest to prayer. Look at verse 3. "Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall." David saw the Lord as my God. He saw God as his God. And in faith, he expected God to answer him. David had sensed here that the Lord had turned away from him. He says, "Look on me." So he's asking God to look once again on him to restore his blessing to David's life. David felt like that God was no longer speaking to him. So he says, "An answer." He asked God to answer his questions. David felt like all was lost, so he asked God to give light to his eyes. And that phrase, "give light to his eyes," was really David was there pleading that God would restore vigor to his life. David was in despair. David was in depression. He was in a dark pit, and he says, "God, just restore life to me." And if God didn't restore life, David would sleep in death. Now, that could be referring to literal death or a metaphor. You know, sometimes you say to people, "I feel like death," when you're sick. You know, it's a metaphor. David seems to be asking God here to restore him so he didn't slip into utter darkness and despair and depression. You can really sense that David was desperate for God's presence. Have you been there? David also saw that the enemy was winning and would rejoice when David fell. And if God's people fell back then, God's reputation would have been called into question. And so David appealed to God to answer him and thus keep his reputation intact. David here is pouring out his heart. He's asking God for his presence. He's asking God for answers. He's pleading with God. He's pouring out his heart in prayer. And then there's a switch. Very sudden. Verse 5. Look at what it says. Here's David. One minute he's going, "Where are you, God?" Then he pours out his heart in prayer, asking for God's presence and for answers. And then he says this in verse 5. "But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me." Suddenly, David has this renewed trust in the Lord. David moved from despair to hope, from complaint to confidence. What happened? David, how did that happen? How did you make that switch? You were in the pit one minute. The next minute you say, "I will trust in God. I will rejoice. I will sing." What's going on? Don't you wish David had written down what happened? Because he doesn't tell us. But here's a couple of thoughts I have on what caused the switch, and maybe we can learn from this. When we get too influenced by our culture today, and cultural values influence us sometimes more than biblical values. And here's the deal. I go back to what I said earlier. We live in a culture where we shouldn't suffer. We live in a culture where we should ignore mourning. And yet that's not what the Bible teaches. But what our culture says is what you need to do is stuff that down and pretend. And so we as Christ followers do that. We stuff it down and pretend. The only problem is then we get sick, then we get depression, we get all kinds of stuff happening that's not good. And what David's saying here and what David's showing us is you can let it all out. You can share it with God. You can call out to God and ask where he is. You can call out to God and say how long. You can come to God in prayer. And you can let, rather than stuffing it all down, you can bring it and verbalize it and bring it all to God. And so here is one of the things I think caused the switch in David is he did that. And when you lament, when you bring it out to God rather than stuff it all down, you sometimes will find healing. A religion that forces you to bottle up your pain and your tears doesn't produce health and healing. It produces anxiety and depression and disease. But a religion that encourages you like the book of Psalms does to come before God openly and candidly with your lament is a religion that is capable of bringing God's healing into your life. And I think that's what happened with David. I think what happened with David is David went splat. He kind of just like emotionally vomited on God, if you will. And in doing that and letting it all out, David found healing. And I think we can find the same thing. I think when we say, look, I'm not going to live by culture's values, I'm going to live by biblical values. And the Bible encourages me to be honest with God. The Bible encourages me to tell God what I'm really thinking, good and bad, about him, about life. The Bible encourages me to come to God in prayer and ask for his presence, ask for his blessing, ask for him to turn towards me and answer my request. When we do start to do all that, rather than stuffing stuff down, we start to find healing. I want us to see something that's really interesting about this psalm. If you look at the number of lines per part, verse 1 and 2, that first part has 5 lines. Verse 3 and 4 has 4 lines, and verse 5 and 6 has 3 lines. Now, in the NIV, there's 4 lines, but in the original language, there's 3 lines. So you notice what's happening here? This psalm moves from turmoil and heightened emotions expressed in 5 lines through an increasingly calming prayer expressed in 4 lines to a final expression of trust in God in 3 lines. You see, it's kind of just going on smoothing out. And I thought about this week, and I thought it's like a crashing wave. A wave that's coming down. It's a huge wave. And then it just comes down, and then it just calms as it comes towards shore. And I thought that's what lamenting is like. We're in all this turmoil. We're in all this upset. And our emotions are all just churning inside, and life is just chaos, and it's like a big wave coming down. But as we lament, as we pour out our heart to God, suddenly things become calmer. And we experience some healing and a renewed perspective on God and our circumstances. I think that's one of the things that this psalm teaches us. When I walked out of Lionsgate Hospital that night, and I was so mad at God, felt like God had forgotten us, abandoned us. What was going on? It was brutal. And in the midst of me having this intense conversation with God, something happened. I started to sense God's presence in a fresh way. I started to sense God saying to me, turn your focus to me, not your situation. And as over that night and the next day, as I continued to talk to God, I started to feel his presence more and more and his call to focus on him, not my circumstances. And as that happened, you could just feel that wave of emotion and everything else calming in me. And God was healing me because I was pouring out my lament to him. If I'd stuffed that down inside, I would have become unhealthy. but because I poured it out to God. In raw honesty, words I would never share with you, I shared with God. Because I did that, God gave me a fresh sense of His presence and a fresh perspective on the situation. And I think He'll do the same for you. Here's the second thing that I think may have caused the change in David. It seems that David's transition came during prayer. Listen, prayer might not change your circumstances, but it can change you and your perspective. It seems that David poured out his anguish. As he poured out his anguish and his anger and his despair to God, it brought a new orientation. Look at what he says. He says, "But I trust, I rely on, I depend on, I place my confidence in your unfailing love." Notice, David's placing his trust in God's unfailing, steadfast, covenantal love and faithfulness. Our God is a covenant-making, covenant-keeping God. No matter what, God's covenant with His people will always remain. God has made promises to us, and He will not break or back out of those promises because He is a covenant-keeping God. He will not abandon David, and He will not abandon you. He will not forget David, and He will not forget you. Some of you this morning need to hear these words from Isaiah 49. "Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget," listen to these words. These are words for some of you this morning. "I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palm of my hands." He's engraved you on the palm of His hands. He will not forget you. Back in World War II, there was a Jewish man in a concentration camp, and he had as his role, well, actually was forced to do this, it was to clean toilets. And one day this man knelt with his hands immersed, swabbing and scrubbing away the filth. And a Nazi guard sought to humiliate him further, and he said to this man, this man had his hands in this toilet cleaning and scrubbing all this filth. He says, "Where's your God now?" And quietly, without removing his hands, the prisoner replied, "He's right here with me in the muck." And some of you need to hear that today, that God is right there with you in the muck. Let me remind you of some of Jesus' last words to us in the Bible, Matthew 28:20. Jesus says, "I'm with you always, to the very end of the age. I'm with you always, always. I'm with you when you're on the mountains. I'm with you when you're in the valleys, and I'm with you in between. I'm with you always." Jesus is with us even in the muck. In the end, David chose, made a choice. He said, "I'm going to rejoice in my salvation, and I'm going to sing praises to my God." And so that's what we're going to do this morning. Kim's going to come and lead us, and we're going to sing a song of praise to Jesus, and then we're going to witness three baptisms, and we're going to celebrate those. But I want to encourage you this morning. I want to encourage you. Don't follow culture's values. Follow the Bible's teaching. The Bible teaches us to lament well. The Bible teaches us to call out to God and to be honest to Him. And the Bible teaches us that as we do that, that in those moments, we'll find a fresh sense of God's presence. In those moments, we'll find a new orientation. In those moments, we'll be assured that He is with us in the muck. Let's pray. Father, I just pray that, well, Father, there are people here today. Let me pray this way. There are people here today, God, that are in the muck, and they need to know that You're with them. There are people here today who are too stoic, and they push down stuff for years inside, and it's eating them up. They're in despair. They're in depression. They're just being eaten up by the God. They just need to know today they can be free with you, that they can go, and they can go, and they can just share with you, and they can lament, that they can ask where you are. They can just express all range of emotions with you. They can pray to you for your presence and your answers, and that, God, you are a covenant-keeping God who is faithful to your promises. And so, God, I pray, as people go before you, as they open their hearts to you, that they will experience you in a fresh way, that they will get a new orientation, that, God, you will do some healing in lives today. God, I pray for those today that are in the muck, that they will know without a doubt that you have not forgotten them, that you have not abandoned them, that you've written their names on the palm of your hand. God, give them that assurance so that they can carry on. In Jesus' name, amen.